Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Ken Miller. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Miller is a medical oncologist specializing in pain and palliative care, and he serves as the Director of the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Ken Miller welcomes Christine Frisbee. Christine is the chair of the Richard D. Frisbee III Foundation, and she joins us to talk about her new book, Day by Day, which documents her family's struggle with leukemia.
You wrote a beautiful book, and so let me ask you one question. So tell us a little bit about Rich.
Rich was our second child, our first son. He was growing very tall and very thin, and had just started at New Canaan High School right before he was diagnosed with leukemia in September of 1988. And having five children, everyone was very well. We were very, very shocked to hear that he had leukemia, but once we found out, we realized that he had had the symptoms for quite a long time, but they hadn't presented themselves so strongly that one would know that he had leukemia. He was a smart boy, not number one in his class, but smart boy, and he was very athletic. And one day he came home from school and said, "Mom, I couldn't run down the soccer field, and I failed a French test," and he cried. And Rich wasn't the type of child who cried easily. And I just thought, well, he must be awfully tired from starting at New Canaan High School. I said, "Rich, the teachers are pushing you. They want you to do well. They're going to be very serious with you the first week of school to make sure you do well. Why don't you stay home and catch up on your rest?" He had been away at a camp the summer before, an Outward Bound camp, and I thought he might just be exhausted. So he stayed home. And I was doing an antique show in Greenwich, and I came home at lunchtime to check on him, and he said he felt faint. And I said, "I don't like the sound of that." So we went to the doctor's office immediately, and the doctor did many more tests than a pediatrician would normally do. And he said, "Call me tonight." And this pediatrician, Dr. Flynn, had nine children, and he never really spoke like that. So it was of great concern that he would act in such an imperative way at the time. And so we called him, you know, that night, and he said, "You have an appointment at Yale in the morning. It's serious."
Yeah. Let me ask you, it's been many years, but do you remember that phone call as if it was yesterday?
I do. Yeah. I remember where I was standing. I remember where my husband was. I remember him saying to me, "What did he say? What did he say? What did he say?" And I said, "He said it's serious." And he said, "What else did he say?" I said, "I couldn't ask anything else. I knew he meant it." I said, "We have to get to sleep because we have to be at his office at 7:30 in the morning with Rich with a packed bag."
How did you share that with Rich himself? That something was serious and that you needed to go to the hospital?
Well, I told him calmly. I knew that the doctor meant it, but I still thought maybe he made a mistake. And so we were going very, very fast up 95 the next morning. And there was this song that was so popular then, "Don't Worry, Be Happy," mm-hmm. was on the radio. And Rich turned to me and he said, "Don't worry, Mom, be happy. It's not bad." But within a few hours, he had the chemotherapy and, you know, infused into him to start right away.
Can you tell us a little bit about that first day, about how they made the diagnosis and you know, what that experience was like for all of you?
Rick and I went into the emergency room. It was the old hospital then. They didn't have the new children's hospital at that point. And Dr. Diana Beardsley was waiting for us, and she said that she had to do a couple more tests. So they brought Rich into a procedure room, and they did a bone marrow biopsy and aspiration. And then they asked us to leave the room, and she told us that Rich had leukemia. And I said, are you sure? And she said, we're pretty sure. And so I left in my mind that hope that maybe they weren't sure. So she said, you're going to go up and check into a room. And Rick and I were crying and completely in shock. We really didn't know what leukemia was. And we thought that this had something had to be wrong. I mean, he was not that sick. He was just tired. How could he be that sick? So I immediately got on the phone in the emergency room and called my mother and tried to say what was going on. And she said, we have to get other opinions and all of this commotion that so often happens when somebody's diagnosed with a serious illness.
I have to say, I think we were talking earlier that in our family we've had a similar shock. My wife was diagnosed with leukemia, but there is a sense of disbelief. It's because life goes from being pretty normal one day to being very, very abnormal the next.
It does, and I often talk about it being the first day of the rest of my life. And it changed our lives completely, that illness. And I think even Rich did pass away, but I think even if Rich had lived, it would have changed our lives forever, because the reality of those harsh moments in life really do zap something out of you and into you that make you look at life differently.
Let me ask you, I actually really want to talk about that, what's zapped in and what's zapped out. What made you decide to share this story now in particular?
Well, I ended up working in the field after Rich passed away, and I found that there was such a strength in the families that I worked with. I searched for unrelated donors for families. And sometimes we would work for over a year with these families, and I'd watch the children come into the clinic and leave the clinic, month after month, and I'd get to know the children and the families very well. And I felt such a bonding with them. And eventually it came to me that I wanted to know how my children felt about all of these experiences that they had been through. And so I asked Meg and Mary Jane, the two youngest, to write stories for me, with the idea that I would love to get stories from many children, because I felt that I really didn't know how they felt until they put it down on paper. You talk about things, but you don't talk about things in as much depth sometimes as you think you should. And they put things down on paper that I never knew that they felt. So I sort of had this as an idea that I wanted to work on, but I didn't know how it would develop. And it's taken a long time to reach our goal in getting the stories together. It was very hard to get the stories from other people, very hard for them to write down on paper really how they felt. A lot of people wouldn't.
Because it was too painful?
Because it was too painful. Yeah. They really didn't want people to know how they felt. But I hope that the book will show those people who found it so hard that there is a common thread between all of these people. And it's not a bad thing to feel, pain or anger or embarrassment. It's normal.
So along those lines, let me ask you, talking about Rich, I think a lot of people would say, geez, I'm afraid to bring it up with Christine because it's going to be painful. So let me ask you that. Is this okay to talk about? Is it, it's okay for people to ask you about?
It is. I think for me, it's part of who I am now. And I'm proud that we were able to survive it and be happy. I mean, our family is very, very happy. We acknowledge that this happened. It is painful. But you can stand up and move forward and be very happy in life. And I look at every day as a joy. Every day brings new things to me. And that's one of the things I want to show by having these stories written by the children, because they're inspirational. They write about how they are not sorry that this happened to them, that they see good things in life, that they want to help other people, that they respect all the differences in people. And this is what I hope to achieve from the book, because it's really what I feel.
So with your children, you mentioned that there was what they had to share about their experience with their brother was different than you might have expected.
Yes.
In what ways?
Well, some of them expressed a lot more anger at what happened and how I handled things at the time. They didn't express to me then how angry they were that I couldn't be there for the soccer games, that I didn't give the right response over, can I go to the dance, or why won't you buy me that dress? And often I'd be exhausted, and I'd snap at them, and I'd, you know, be rushing around trying to balance everything out. And I thought they sort of understood, but then I realized that they didn't. And it made me very sad to think that I wasn't able to be all things to all people during that time in our lives.
Is that, well, the way I look at this in many ways is a process. I think, you know, as you've now had more years to look back on this experience, but, you know, is that okay now? I mean, you realize, I guess as I listen to it, I say, geez, you know what, you're just a person, and really doing probably the best you could with a very, very difficult situation. So is that something you're able to feel comfortable with, or is it still a sore point?
No, I am able to feel better about it, and I will tell you that I just recently, I know that you have read the book, and I just recently, actually, I gave it to my children to read. And one of my children wrote me what she felt about it, and there were four very strong points. And she said that she realized how hard it was for me. For the first time, she realized that I felt I was, you know, incapable of being all things to all people. And she felt, she was so compassionate about it. I felt, wow, we still are going through our own healing process as a family. Even though I think we've done well, it was Meg who actually wrote this to me. And she said, wow, Mom, this is amazing. I never realized that you felt that way. All I realized was how I felt.
Yeah.
And she said, now I know how hard it was for you. And I think it's so wonderful that we're all going to understand each other better. And I think it's going to be a wonderful story for parents and a wonderful story for children, too. And that, again, is our healing process ongoing. So that was so nice for her to say.
You know, I think when people are in the midst of a crisis like this, or have lost a loved one, a son or a daughter, or a spouse, a sister, a brother, there's probably a feeling that, you know, I can't go to the next day. I can't make the next day. And it's, I have to say, for me, interesting and reassuring to hear that the healing process does go on, but often, and it's okay that it takes a lot of time.
It is okay. I mean, this all happened almost 20 years ago. It's a long time ago. And I really, really do feel that we will be healing for the rest of our lives. But everything that happens in our lives really is a process. And I don't think that everybody realizes that every day, everything that happens to you is a process that you can take and help develop your character and make you stronger and more positive. It's all the way you look at it.
Well, we'd like to remind you to please feel free to email questions and some of your thoughts to canceranswers@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and then please stay tuned to learn more information about coping with cancer in your family and about sort of the process of recovery afterwards with Christine Frisbee.
Over 170,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer this year, and more than 85% of these diagnoses are related to smoking. The important thing to understand is that quitting, even after decades of use, can significantly reduce your risk of developing lung cancer. Every day, patients with lung cancer are surviving thanks to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care, and new treatment options are giving lung cancer survivors new hope. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for lung cancer. And patients enrolled in these trials are given access to medicines not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm here tonight with Christine Frisbee, who's the chair of the Richard D. Frisbee III Foundation and author of a new book that's about to be released called titled Day by Day. Christine, we've been talking about your son, Rich, and let me ask about your other children. How old are they now?
Kirsten, the eldest, is 36. Jim, Rich would have been second. Jim is 30. Meg is 26, and Mary Jane is 24.
I mean, it's impossible to know how life would have been different if Rich had not gotten sick. But how do you think your children may be different than they would have been otherwise, in good or bad ways? And how are you different, for that matter?
Well, I think my eldest daughter goes through life treading very carefully. She has three children of her own right now, and anytime one of them is sick, she's very fearful that something very serious will happen to them. It has affected her very, very much, and she was very angry for a long time. And between the two of us, there was a lot of anger, and it took years and years for her to realize that I did the best I could do, and she had to just be angry at me for whatever she needed to be angry at me about. And eventually, she got over it. Jim missed his only brother. His brother used to be the more aggressive one and used to beat up on him when they were little, and he talks about that in the stories. I think it made Jim very shy. I think he had a hard time going through school. He was the more quiet one of the boys and probably the most quiet of all the children. I do think that he reflects back now, and it gives him great strength. He's a wonderful, kind individual, married for a year and a half, and is an architect, and he's quite remarkable. Meg was very difficult at first. She was acting out at school. She was only in second grade when Rich was diagnosed, and she was Rich's donor. He had a bone marrow transplant, and she was his donor. And she writes in her story about how all she wanted to do when she was his donor is be wheeled around in a wheelchair, even though she didn't need it, and be considered a queen because she was so sick of everybody giving Rich the attention, and she wanted a little attention of her own. But she was very difficult at the time, and I was complaining to a friend. I said, this has really affected Meg. And she says, why don't you put her in the swimming pool and have her swim year-round? Well, we did, and Meg ended up becoming a fabulous swimmer, you know, a nationally recognized swimmer, so something good came out of her eagerness, you know, to show me how she felt. And Mary Jane, she was the youngest, and she doesn't really remember it that much, but I do think they say the youngest actually are the most affected, and I think it's true because Mary Jane, her memories of growing up in the family were always a family who lost a brother. And the others knew Rich better. And she was so young when, she was only five when Rich was diagnosed and died. So that's an awfully young age to try to remember everything about Rich.
So let me ask you, for you and for your children, having the opportunity to write about this. And let me ask you also about for the other people that contributed to the book as well. Is there a sense of healing by having shared the story?
Oh, yes. Most of the children who contributed and young adults who contributed were so thrilled to write their story. They're so excited for the book to come out. They felt it was such a healing process to tell people how they felt and what it was like for them. And although some people were afraid to contribute stories, I really do think the ability to voice what they felt is such a healing process for everyone. And there's a common thread in the stories amongst all of them, even though all of the siblings had different illnesses. They're not all about cancer, although there are many that have brain tumors and leukemias. There's also stories about autistic children with an autistic child in the family and many different things. And there still is that common thread that they have been asked to be soldiers and be strong and make something positive out of a difficult situation. So I think it's really remarkable that not even knowing each other, they all told the same story, and we're very grateful to tell the story.
And I have to say, it's wonderful to have the opportunity to read it because I learned a lot by reading those stories. Let me ask you, how, as an oncologist and for physicians that are listening, and how can we better be of help to families going through this experience?
Well, I think when an oncologist, a hematologist, any doctor is dealing with a family that has a sick child, I think they need to also ask the parents, how are the other children doing? How is your family doing? Is anyone else, you know, needing attention? Do you need to bring in help? Do you need to have a social worker, a religious person come support you? Do your schools need somebody to talk to them? I know that the Leukemia Society had a program for schools when Rich was sick, and one of the teachers, came up to it. And it made the world of difference that all of a sudden they knew what the whole family was going through. And I really do think that if the doctors and nurses, physician's assistants could pay attention to the whole family, I think it would really be helpful.
Very, very well said, and I think it's an important reminder for all of us. You've aside from writing the book, which has been a huge commitment and a wonderful gift to all of us, you've been very active in supporting cancer research and children who are going through similar experiences. Can you tell us about the Richard Frisbee Foundation?
Well, as I said earlier, when Rich was diagnosed, I was an antiques dealer and I was doing an antique show in Greenwich. And the people who ran those shows, the Wendy's, Diane Wendy, and her daughter Meg, said to me, well, why don't we do a fundraiser to raise money for Yale? And we had gone to an antique show to buy a painting for the new bone marrow transplant unit. And they said, well, let's not just buy a painting, let's have an event. So they decided to run an antique show, which was held in Cox Cage here at Yale. And another friend of mine said, let's have a dinner dance as well. So all of a sudden, we started the foundation. It was not my plan to start it, but there it was. So I kind of am one of these people who feel that a door opens, you make a decision. You either walk through it or you don't, and I decided to walk through that door. So for the last 20 years, we've been running different events, and the money goes to support cancer research, education, and direct patient care, everything from art therapy for the children in the hospital with all different illnesses to housing for patients who come from afar to get treatment at Yale, and research at many different institutions, and nursing scholarships. I think we've provided about 25 now.
Which is really very, very exciting. How long has the foundation been in existence?
We established it in 1990, just a year after Rich passed away.
Yeah. As we were talking about earlier, the book will be out very, very soon. Who are some of the people that you think are really the audience for this book?
Well, I think the audience is very wide, actually. I hope that the book will be read as an inspirational book. As you know, it's a very hard read, some of it.
Yes.
The stories are very, very touching. But I do want people to take away from it that it's applicable in many, many different situations, not just children with cancer, children with other illnesses. I hope that schools will provide this book so that all of the children in the school can be sensitized towards what these children go through when somebody has a sick sibling in their family. I hope that doctors will read it and nurses will read it. I hope teachers will read it. And therefore, you know, I think in the best of worlds, it will be a book that many, many people will reach out to read for inspiration, for knowledge, and to help them understand that we're all here in this world and we all go through bumps, but we can hopefully take those bumps and smooth the road out for each other to make life a little easier.
Yeah, I just want to share with you, I got a real sense of hope in reading the book, because it's looking at people sharing very honestly very tough situations that they've been in and how hard it was in many times. And also a sense of resilience.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, the resilience is amazing. And I think that children can share their resilience with adults, and adults need to be reminded that they can bounce back like children do.
Is there anything, I mean, I'll ask you a tough question perhaps, but I mean, anything that you would do differently yourself as you look back? I mean, now we're looking back 20 years ago, but anything you'd do differently, or any sort of words of advice for other parents going through very tough situations like this?
Yes, a few things. I would have I would have spent more time discussing things with my other children, not assuming that they understood everything that I was doing or everything that was going on. That's the one thing that's so clear in their stories to me, is that I did not communicate enough to them. I would communicate more. I would also try to communicate more with their teachers to make sure they were okay in school. Those are the most important things that I would change if I were to do it all over again.
So let me, again, perhaps another difficult question, but if Rich was here and reading the book, as an adult, what would his comments be?
He'd say, "It's good, Mom. It's real good."
Yeah, which I have to say is a wonderful wonderful feeling. Well, I want to say, you know, in reading the book, I didn't know Rich, but it made him alive for me.
Thank you.
Which was lovely
of you to say.
Thank you. Which was a gift also. Well, I want to say this is a wonderful book, and I want to really recommend it. And I want to thank you for writing it. And also, I want to share that the proceeds from the book will go to support other projects at the Yale Cancer Center, which is very, very wonderful. So, Christine, I want to thank you for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a treat.
Yeah, and for me too. Until next week, I want to send you our wishes from the Yale Cancer Center for a safe and healthy week, and we hope you'll join us again.
If you have questions, comments, or would like to subscribe to our podcast, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you'll also find transcripts of past broadcasts in written form. Next week, you'll meet Dr. David LaFell, who joins us to talk about skin cancer prevention.